This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, Matt Jolly here from WarbirdRadio.com, here to tell you about our new on-demand programming. Listen, we know your life's busy and you want to listen to your favorite shows when you have the time, not when they're being broadcast. Well, thanks to our new on-demand format, you can do just that. Just click on the on-demand button on the right side of WarbirdRadio.com and follow the simple instructions for setting up your favorite listening device. If you prefer to listen directly from WarbirdRadio.com, well, just click the Play Now button at the bottom of the show story. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy our new on-demand programming.
Hi, everybody. Join me, Nick Desos, Smithsonian Curator, for Preserving Our Past, a lively look at air and space museums across the country. WarbirdRadio.com proudly presents our newest on-demand broadcast, Preserving Our Past, where museum experts share their thoughts and experiences for future generations of air and space museum lovers.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
We've got your six. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in.
Take off.
Hello, welcome to the latest installment of the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. Thanks for joining us here on WarbirdRadio.com for Wix Show number 87. I'm your host, Zane Adams, coming to you from the great state of Texas with the latest information from the Warbird world as seen on the Warbird Information Exchange Forum, which can be found at warbirdinformationexchange.org. It's the latest, get the latest news, the updates, photos, and everything else for, about warbirds there on Wix. And we're glad you're here with us tonight. See, we get you here on the Wix Show. We get you up to date on the warbird news, as well as bring you interviews with interesting people involved in warbird business, be it antique military or modern military aircraft. Anything from military aviation is likely to be a topic of interest around here. And thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to click on the deals button at the top of the Warbird Radio homepage and visit our sponsors. We've got some good stuff out there from the Wright Brothers catalog, AeroCinema, the 509th Remembered, and you know, those great sponsors there. And make sure to visit them, visit that link there on the deals button at the top of the Warbird Radio homepage. That sure helps us out if you do that for us. But, a little bit of news. I know that some of this is this may be a little old news, considering the speed of media nowadays, or virtual media. But here, I know that the long-awaited AVSPEX limited restoration of Jerry Yagan's Mosquito KA114 has flown finally down in at the Ardmore Aerodrome in New Zealand. In fact, she's flown her first air show down under, and it seems she seems to be running well and flying well. The folks down there, there's been a lot of photographs and things on the Wix forum and on Facebook, a couple on the Warbird Radio Facebook page. That you know, it's just great to see that airplane flying again. I can't wait to see her here in the States. She'll be at the Military Aviation Museum in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Soon enough. I don't know exactly what the schedule is, but they'll have to take her apart and ship her over here. So, you know, exciting news to see a Mosquito back in the air. There's another Mosquito, I believe, under restoration up in Canada, and that'll be restored to flight. I know Kermit Weeks has his Mosquito, but I don't think there's any down in Florida, but I don't think there's any plans to get her airborne soon. That's the only Mosquito I ever saw fly was Weeks brought her to the CAF show down in Harlingen years ago, and it's a, if you haven't ever seen a Mosquito fly, it's something else. It's a beautiful airplane. Sounds like a pair of Spitfires flying together, which is always a good thing. It's just a just amazing airplane, and the restoration on that, from the photos I've seen, it looks to be first class. Of course, Jerry Yagan would have it no other way. And look forward to seeing her here in the States. But another news: Collings Foundation's picked up a couple of new airframes. Dick Foote's old three-seater FM2 Wildcat. If you haven't ever seen that airplane, it's an interesting airplane. They have got a little hatch, a little door behind the wing, between the wing and the tail feathers back there, and that little hatch and a couple of windows. There's a couple of seats in there. We're lucky to see, lucky enough to see that down there with Matt Jolly at the Wings Over Houston Air Show a couple of years ago, and it's a really neat airplane. Looks like Collings Foundation is going to restore her back to her original single-seater self. But, you know, it is an interesting piece of airplane, interesting history. And they've also just received an F-6F-3 that's recently been on loan to the Evergreen Museum in Oregon, on loan from the Marine Aviation Museum. That's exciting to see, another Hellcat on the way to back to flight. Both of these aircraft are on their way apparently down to American Aero Services in Florida for a complete first-class restoration. Those are the folks that have brought us, of course, the B-24 from the Collings Foundation, currently flying as Witchcraft, and most recently the Oshkosh winner, the A-36 Mustang. That airplane is just tremendous from the photographs I've seen on it. So they do first-class work down there at American Aero. So look forward to seeing those airplanes come out of their hangar in a couple of years' time and be out with the Collings Foundation. I don't believe the most likely will not be on tour with them for the simple fact that they're not two-seaters, and you know, the waivers required to fly those is something up in the air. But I know those airplanes, or at least fly them on tour anyway, but I know those airplanes will be a great addition to the Collings Foundation. The Canadian Museum of Flight in Langley, British Columbia, has just acquired one of the Grumman Trackers from Conair. It's a Firecat, it's an old fire bomber, and the plans are to maintain the airplane in ground running condition until a time when the CMF, the Canadian Museum of Flight, will be able to operate as a fully airworthy part of their collection. They also plan to leave it in Conair colors, firefighting colors, so the best way to tell the story of a firefighting suppression and aerial fire suppression in British Columbia. And it's good to be a see that another tracker will be kept flying, and another one, you know, another airplane in fire bomber colors. You know, she's probably flown as long as a fire bomber as she had a military aircraft. So that's always fun to see, and something different that might be on the air show circuit here in the near future. The New England Air Museum in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, at their military hangar there, have just recently put on display a Lockheed 104 Starfighter and a World War II combat veteran A-26 Invader, Rita Ray. Both were currently or recently completed in a static restoration, and the photographs I've seen on the Wix forum on those airplanes, they look like fine airplanes and good representatives and beautiful restorations. So if you're up in the Windsor Locks area, Connecticut, go by and see our friend Drew and those guys up there at that museum, and they are doing some good work up there. Tour news, I guess the last of the tours. The Collings Foundation is currently in Pennsylvania, in Delaware this weekend, I think, in Pennsylvania, and on to Delaware, and they're about to head south with stops in Tennessee and North Carolina. That's all that's on this current schedule. I imagine they're going to be headed their way to Florida and shut down the tour and put their airplanes back in their annual restoration/maintenance session and be ready to fly back on tour in most likely early February or so. So if you hadn't caught the Collings Foundation around the country, make sure you catch them in the next month or so. It's probably about all you're going to see this year. But they'll be out again next year. I think that's the only tour left, and the B-29 from the CAF is stopped their touring for the time being. They're getting ready to go to air show coming up in October, this weekend, October 13th, 14th, CAF air show in Midland, Texas. That's always promises to be a great Warbird show. Of course, the CAF, the operator, one of the largest operators of warbirds in the country, and you know, really excited to, if you haven't been to that air show, it's a really exciting air show to go to, and that's coming up this weekend, October 13th, 14th, at the Midland International Airport out in West Texas. Also coming up in the next couple of weeks here, we've got a couple of shows. Jacksonville Sea Sky Air Show on the 20th and 21st. Looks like a Thunderbird show, the Horseman, and some other good acts there. The Wings Over Houston's October 27th and 28th. And that's always a great Warbird air show put on by the CAF down there in South Texas and the Gulf Coast Wing. And it always promises to have some exciting air show action with warbirds flying almost all day long. I know the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds homecoming shows are coming up in the first couple of weeks of November, and that'll be a wrap for the majority of the 2012 air show season. Be a few fly-ins and things here and there, but I know the air show season's about over. It's been a long season. We've got some great shows coming up in the next couple of weeks, so get out and see some flying airplanes, some flying warbirds, and you know, it's always fun to do. A couple of local interest things here. Coming up this weekend is the Vintage Aircraft Car Show, the Fall Fling, put on by the Gratis Generation Aircraft Group here in Fort Worth. It's a fundraiser. They need the money to get their B-25 back in the air. She's got some wing spar issues and some other restoration things that need to be taken care of. It's going to cost them a little pile of money. So, you know, cubic dollars is what keeps these airplanes in the air. So get out and support the Vintage Aircraft Group and Car Show there with the Greatest Generation Group this weekend, October 13th at Meacham Field. Their Fall Fling is going on. Car Show, Air Show, it's a good time. And or not Air Show, but fly-in. The Vintage Flying Museum here in Fort Worth is also holding its annual Hangar Dance Saturday night the 20th. That's always a good time at the airport. Out in the hangar with the gang from the Vintage Flying Museum is always fun. Tickets on sale. Look at their website. I think vintageflyingmuseum.com is just Google Vintage Flying Museum Fort Worth, and you can find there. They've got information on tickets. It's always good fun. So, you know, that's basically the little local plug for my local friends here in Fort Worth area. But I know, and speaking of air shows and speaking of Fort Worth, that brings us to tonight's topic of interest. Last weekend was the annual Alliance Air Show here in my hometown of Fort Worth. Other than low-cat clouds and, frankly, welcome cool temperatures, it was a great show. The Thunderbirds were here. The Canadian Snowbirds were also in attendance. The Horsemen were flew a tremendous three-ship F-86 Sabre show. I hope they continue to fly the Sabres because it was a real treat to see three of those airplanes fly. The show's got huge, large, sweeping loops and rolls, and the Sabres are beautiful against the sky. It was great to see, and it's just a rare sight to see three F-86s flying in formation aerobatics. And, you know, thanks to bringing them out and bringing them to Fort Worth. The Navy Legacy flight flew with the Cavanaugh Museum's Wildcat and the Super Hornet. And the Air Force Heritage flight was here with the F-4. They flew with the F-4, F-86, and a P-38 flying along. And, you know, and among the other fun air show stuff. And you can check out our Facebook page and the Wix show page here on warbirdradio.com for photos. And I'm going to put up a link. I've got a video from this weekend's activity, a little weekend fun. And, you know, that'll be on the Facebook page and here on the Wix show page for all to see. It was a good fun. I was lucky enough to attend the show representing warbirdradio.com, and that was fun. I had a nice chat with Lieutenant Colonel Patrick Karg, the F-4 Heritage Flight pilot, and I also had the good fortune to be along for the ride with the Canadian Forces Parachute Demonstration Team, the Skyhawks. This demo team flies all over the country, all over the United States and Canada, putting on a great show. They do some tremendous things with the parachutes and their drop and their formations and things. Really a hoot to see. To make the ride even better, the jump aircraft this weekend was the Cavanaugh Flight Museum C-47. Their C-47 is serial number 43-15935. She was delivered to the United States Army Air Force in May of 1944, served with the 7th Air Force out of Manila, and was ultimately transferred to the 20th Air Force 7th Fighter Command based at Northwest Field on Guam. So she is a Pacific War veteran. She was converted back to passenger configuration after the war and earned her keep for a long time before the Cavanaugh guys got her. She's currently flying in an 8th Air Force, D-Day invasion stripe scheme. It's a beautiful scheme and a beautiful airplane. It was good fun to fly with the Collings or the Cavanaugh guys. Doug Jeans was our right seat pilot. I didn't quite catch the name of the the pilot for our flight, but they did a great job and put the parachuters where they needed to be and brought us all home safely. It was good fun. I've never flown with a jump team before, but we were suited up with our FAA-required parachutes for about a 20-minute flight. And the FAA requires everybody on board except for the pilots to have a parachute on when you're dropping jumpers, just in case something goes wrong, we have an opportunity to get out of the airplane. I don't know how I would have fared with a bailout chute, but, you know, it's better than the alternative, I guess. So it's the first time I've ever worn a parachute, so that was good fun. We had some low clouds, so the jumpers left the airplane about 3,000 feet. They call it a pop and or a drop and pop. That's what the young guys on the team called the flight. The Skyhawks, like I said, perform all over the United States and Canada. They represent the whole of the Canadian forces. Members from all branches are eligible for selection to the team, and they really they're combat veterans. A lot of them, or most of them, are combat veterans. They're veterans of Afghanistan and Bosnia and Kosovo, supporting NATO. They've all done their time. And it is a tight selection process to get onto the team, as you would suspect. A lot of training goes into it. Most of these jumpers have several hundred jumps, and they were a great bunch of young men and women. The young men jumping on Friday were, I guess we say, gracious, informative, and rambunctious. these guys, you know, it's a bunch of 20-somethings, maybe a little older than that for some of the senior guys on the team, but they were a lot of fun, really, really nice guys. Thanks to Captain Indira Thackeray for the public affairs officer. She did a great job making us all feel welcome on the jump. And to Corporal Bergeron and Sergeant Dickin, and for the rest of the team, for a fun afternoon. Those couple of guys there were great fun, and really helped us out, helped us in the airplane, out of the airplane, and during the flight were intended to our needs, and really a great bunch of guys. We were briefed on our flight and about the team by Sergeant Sebastian Tremblay, a veteran of both Bosnia and Afghanistan. I recorded a little bit of that, and so we'll play it now, and I'll be back in a moment. Here's what Sergeant Tremblay had to say.
Just like every other performer, like we do the autograph signing session and all that stuff. We try, basically our mission is to connect with the people, to try to, you know, that I'm military personnel or not. It's not somebody that is enclosed somewhere, and you know, we break the glass in case of an emergency. You know, I have a home too. I've got a dog. I got a family, and a lot of people are not accustomed with the military. Maybe more over north. You guys have a way bigger military, so more interaction with, right?
Some people. What's the process like to make the team?
To make the team? The team, every position on the team, every permanent position, we call this the cadre position, is 2 years. And all those positions are filled with parachute instructors at our jump school in Trenton, Ontario. And for the rest of the jumpers that come to the team, they're called augmentees. Anybody in the forces. It doesn't have to be infantry. It can be Navy, Air Force, whoever. You can have your military quals, or if you don't, you can be a civilian jumper and have a minimum of a B license, 50 jumps, and you can apply. And if you're selected, then you come to our selection camp. You try out for 2 weeks. If you make the cut, then you stay with the team. If not, well, depending on your skill level, you'll be re-invited or not for the next year.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How many members on the team?
Right now, 19 altogether. It depends on every year. I mean, you have we have the home team, we have a clerk, we have a an operations officer, we have a warrant, PR guy, our CQ, our quartermaster, and our transport NCO. These are positions, like hard positions that we need. We also have a public affairs officer, and these are the permanent positions. Then everybody else that comes to replenish the ranks for the formation and all this, everybody else is from outside any element, air, land, or sea. Whoever wants to spend a season with us, we'll give it a try, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, well, thanks for trying.
Mm-hmm. So you're not strictly an Army team, then, or something?
The team belongs to the Army.
Okay.
The team belongs to the Army, but it's open.
To the all forces?
Yes, to all forces, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Do you guys ever compete?
What's that?
Does the team ever compete?
Compete?
In jump?
Like in, like the skydiving competitions, or?
You mean like CISM, like military side? No.
Okay.
No. Some guys will do this civvy side.
Yeah.
But if they're on a team, but otherwise.
So the Skyhawks is strictly just pretty much air show.
Yeah, it's air show. It's a demonstration team, and it's a big PR tool for the forces.
Y'all jump into the sporting events and that kind of thing as well?
We can jump in. We can jump it out of school.
Okay.
Like this year, our opening ceremony was at a sports track at the Trenton High School.
Okay.
So we jumped in, and all like the school was out. The mayor of the city was there, and all kind of important people with news, you know,
sure.
All that. And, yeah, we jumped on the sports track.
Okay.
And we packed a parachute with the kids. We show our equipment, how it works. And we try to describe with words as accurate as possible what it is like to jump out of an aircraft. Like, what's the... It's a feeling.
Sure.
And trying to translate that with words, it's tricky. Yeah, so that's what we do.
How long have you been with the team?
This is my first year.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many jumps you got?
I have 580-something jumps.
Yeah. A few?
Oh, a few. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Oh, yes. We have guys with, 200, 300 jumps. We have guys with 7,000 jumps. It all depends. It's the skill levels are all different. Yeah. We go through the cadre training camp during the winter months, like January or February. We go down to California in Paris Valley. We're going to spend 2 weeks to jump, to train our instructors for crew or canopy relative work, because it's not the same as free fall. All our instructors are military focused parachuting business. So once you start to do crew, it's a completely different world. It's another kind of parachute. It's like it's a total different ball game. So we go there, we train, then we come back. We prepare to greet the augmentees that are going to come to the team. We get them dressed up, then we bring them down to California, and we go there for 5 weeks. Now we go through a week and a half, and then we choose whoever's going to stay, whoever's not staying, depending on how many applications that we had. If there's a lot of people applying, we're going to bring as much as we can in accordance with the equipment available, and if nobody is applying or if there's very few applications, like we try to bring everybody, and sometimes applications are tough to, is it's a high, we're on a high tempo right now of missions and all that stuff, and a lot of units are not prepared to to let them their elements go out and do other stuff than what they're focusing on right now.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we'll bring as much people as we can. We'll train them. We'll select, and once the selection is done, then we match people and we put them in different formations depending on who's flying well with who. And every cadre is a pilot of a specific formation. Like for myself, I'm the pilot of the three stack drag. So we build up a three stack, and I have my bottom guy coming up to my second guy, and he'll transition and flip his parachute upside down. So you have two guys and one guy upside down coming towards the ground. It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You guys try to change up your routine every year?
Formations are pretty much the same. The show-wise, the routine of the show is going to change on, first of all, if it's a low show, like if the ceiling is very low, like we need a minimum of 2,500 feet to jump out, and that's pretty low.
Yeah.
But it's hop and pop. As soon as you go out, you open. And the routine of the show is going to change depending on the altitude, and that's just for the length of the show, how many passes, how many formations are going to jump out at the same time. And if ever there's an injury, or like if a guy got injured, or if a guy had to go home for some personal stuff or whatever, and there's a hole in that formation and nobody can fill that position, then there's other formations that we can do. There's other we have other options that we can work with, and it's always a show for the audience to see paratroopers just coming down and hitting the target.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah.
Awesome.
It's really cool.
So what in the active duty in your Canadian forces, what is the airborne component do? Are y'all doing combat jumps now? Are y'all involved in Afghanistan? You know, your units and that kind of thing. I mean, what are you training for? What are you doing otherwise other than this?
Other than this, I'm like half the team this year is infantry. I'm infantry also.
Okay.
I was posted to the school when I came back from Afghanistan, and we don't have big units, big airborne units like you guys do.
Sure.
We have small subunits within a unit.
Okay.
We'll have a subunit, basically para, but these guys, if they're not used on a para capacity, they'll be used as regular
infantry.
Okay. Yeah. Like with the labs and...
Yeah. Y'all aren't specifically special ops or anything like that as well then? Or is that...
We don't have... we're not specific to one thing. Like,
okay.
Guys can move around and do different jobs.
Okay.
That's one of the cool things about it.
So you can move throughout, like, branches of the military?
Within my own field of expertise,
yeah.
I can do different jobs. I can operate different positions.
Well, that was Sergeant Sebastian Tremblay, and the rest of the media group there had about four or five media personnel, a couple of folks in the drop zone, a couple of jumpers, guys that were going to tandem jump, a young woman and a young man from the University of North Texas, I believe, were going to tandem jump with the team, and they were all fired up and ready to go. Neither one of them had... jumped out of an airplane, I believe, and they had got all psyched up and all for naught because the ceiling wasn't high enough. We still needed another 1,500 to 2,000 feet to get those tandem jumpers out safely, and so they elected not to go. On the video that I shot on board, that'll be I have a link up on the site and on our Facebook page. You can see that the guys call an audible in the air. You know, the guys gather around together, and their Sergeant Dickens says, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then they say, oh, wait a minute. We got to change. We're going to all go out at once. So they went out in a single stick, but it was good fun to see them in action there. you know, like I said, calling an audible and doing a little change up in the middle, and they took it in stride. And it's just kind of odd to just see fellows just walk out the back of an airplane in flight. If you've never been there and seen it, it just kind of strikes you funny, leaving a perfectly good airplane behind. But they had an awful good time doing it, and they really love skydiving and demonstrating their techniques and their skills there. But you know, the youth serving their country in the military, be it Canada and the United States, anyone I've ever met, they've never ceased to amaze me. Fine young men and women, upstanding people in our community, and it was a good afternoon hanging out with them. We're going to take a quick short commercial break here, a little time out, and we'll be right back with an interview with Lieutenant Karg, F4 driver, right after this.
This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, Matt Jolly here from WarbirdRadio.com, here to tell you about our new on-demand programming. Listen, we know your life's busy and you want to listen to your favorite shows when you have the time, not when they're being broadcast. Well, thanks to our new on-demand format, you can do just that. Just click on the on-demand button on the right side of WarbirdRadio.com and follow the simple instructions for setting up your favorite listening device. If you prefer to listen directly from WarbirdRadio.com, well, just click the Play Now button at the bottom of the show story. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy our new on-demand programming.
Hi, everybody. Join me, Nick Desos, Smithsonian Curator, for Preserving Our Past, a lively look at air and space museums across the country. WarbirdRadio.com proudly presents our newest on-demand broadcast, Preserving Our Past, where museum experts share their thoughts and experiences for future generations of air and space museum lovers.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
We've got your six. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in.
Take off.
Thanks for joining us here on WarbirdRadio.com for the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. I am your host, Zane Adams, and we're talking about the Alliance Air Show this weekend. One of the highlights of the show this year for me was the appearance of the McDonnell Douglas F-4 Phantom. And in the USA, United States Air Force Heritage Flight. The F-4 is currently flown by the 82nd Aerial Target Squadron at Holloman and Tyndall Air Force Bases out of New Mexico and Florida. They are used as target drones, still serving their country 52 years after entering service with the U.S. Navy and the Air Force. This supersonic fighter has served with distinction in the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, and is, I think, 11 or so other air forces worldwide. Our friends in Germany and Japan are still flying the airplane, also those folks in Iran are still flying the F-4. I think the Israelis are still flying it. There may be a few others. I'm not exactly up to date on who is exactly flying them, but it's an amazing machine to see blasting through the sky. It looks and sounds like no other jet fighter. It's just a big, bad airplane. I really miss seeing them. I grew up here in the United States, or in the U.S., of course, but here in Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we had them flying out of Dallas Naval Air Station over in Grand Prairie, Texas, and the 47th Fighter Squadron, the Fort Worth Phantoms, flew the birds out of Carswell Air Force Base, and, growing up, seeing the Air Force fly, it's kind of a drag not to see them fly much anymore. I know the Collings Foundation still has one up and running, but the Air Force has still got some airplanes. I think they've got 70 or so, and they're flying them as target drones. They do have an explosive charge on board when they're in drones, remote control airplanes, flying, up against our latest missiles and other folks. When they don't, if they're not able to come back, they're blown up, but... it's one of those deals. It's still a job for the Air Force. And flying the Phantom this weekend for the Heritage Flight was the CO of the 82nd Target Squadron, Colonel Patrick Ichi Karg. Colonel Karg was gracious enough to grant us an interview for Warbird Radio next to the airplane, out on the ramp as she set ready for the show. And here's a little bit of what Colonel Carg had to say.
We're here on the ramp at Alliance Airport in the cold, a nice cold Texas day, and you're an F-4 driver in the, you know, at Air Force, out of Holloman Air Force Base, is that correct?
That's right, yep. We fly F-4s out at Holloman as part of the full-scale target program, and we're actually, between us and Tyndall, we're the only provider of full-scale targets in the DoD.
Okay. And how many airplanes are in the system, do you know?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
We have about 30-plus down at Tyndall, and we have a little over 30 at Holloman, and those are just total airplanes, not the total flyable ones that we have. And we have a few more in reserve, so up to about 70 to 90 is what we have left, and those are all slated to be targets.
Okay. And how many you shoot down a week, a month?
Well,
what's the rate there?
At Tyndall, they tend to do one or two a month.
Okay.
Because they do the weapon system evaluation program, mm-hmm. where they evaluate the missiles and the airplanes. Out at Holloman, we do slightly less. This year, total, we've shot down 6.
Okay. All right. And this airplane here, it's an RF-4, right?
Actually,
or is it not?
This is an F-4E.
Okay.
So slightly different than the RF. This has got the slatted forward edge on the leading edge on the wings.
Okay.
The RFs are being flown down at Tyndall, and
okay.
those are the C models. And they just recently converted those over and are starting to shoot those guys down right now.
Okay. All right. And Heritage Flight. You're here for Heritage Flight, of course. And how many airplanes they operate in Heritage Flight?
For Heritage Flight, there's a collection of numerous vintage warbirds, the P-38, the P-51, P-47, A-1, all of those, probably 10 warbirds, different types of warbirds
sure.
that they fly. And then we have the F-4s as well, and then the active duty ACC aircraft that fly with us as well. We have the F-16, the A-10, and the F-22.
Okay.
Those guys all fly with us. This weekend at Alliance, it's a cool mixture. We've got the P-38 out front. We've got the F-86 on the inside wing,
uh-huh.
and the F-4 will be on the outside wing.
Okay.
And
no F-16. No modern airplane.
No, well,
that's kind of fun.
The F-4 right. is considered the modern airplane, I guess,
sure.
For
yeah.
that bunch. But interestingly, I was talking to the narrator last night, and apparently the collection that we have are the leading aces of each era.
Yeah, there you go.
Flying out here.
Yeah, yeah. We got Bong and, I don't remember who, Davis. Well, one of them's painted up in Davis's name. I don't know who the leading ace is for the Korea. I don't know. But
I will tell you, I'm not as smart as I should be on that. I could
yeah.
make up a name, but I think somebody would call me out
right,
on that.
Right, right. And who's the F-4 guy?
The ace, uh-huh. yeah, Steve Ritchie.
Steve Ritchie, okay.
yep.
There you go.
And I think Cunningham was the other guy.
Yeah, that's right, Randall Cunningham.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, okay, all right. And how many Air Force fly in the Heritage Flight Program?
Well, again, we have a collection between us and Tyndall.
Okay.
And out at Holloman, we have, I think, 3 of them really painted up nicely. We have one more on the way, so
okay.
about 4 of them that we fly out there. And then they have about the same number down at Tyndall. So probably,
okay.
you know, 4 to 8
okay.
airplanes that are painted really nicely.
Yeah. And you brought 2 jets today. Of course, one's a backup, correct?
That's right, yeah.
All right. And the paint job on this, they're Southeast Asian vintage kind of camo, right?
Yep. And, in fact, the one that we're going to get painted up this month is going to be the same paint job.
Okay.
It looks the same. We're going to do a little bit different on the tail. We're going to try and make it a 50th anniversary commemorative tail.
Okay.
But that'll be kind of the only difference.
Okay. All right. And about you, we were talking earlier, you started out in 15s, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. My first assignment was flying F-15s at Kadena. And then I came back and flew F-4s with the German Air Force as an instructor, an exchange instructor with those guys.
At Holloman, right?
At Holloman, yep. And then I flew F-15s a couple more times down at Eglin in Hawaii. And now I'm back flying F-4s again. So I've
okay.
Been blessed to have flown some of the best airplanes in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And flying the F-4, I mean, it's a big airplane, it's a heavy airplane compared to the F-15. It's not, I guess, is don't have as much juice and is maneuverability, but
yeah, that's exactly right. It's an interesting transition flying the older airplane and the newer airplane, and you can see exactly where the newer airplane came from. The systems are relatively similar. It's easy to remember because what they did with the F-15 was they.
Cop and they're giving you a ticket for being in the
So it's really fascinating for me as a pilot to fly both of those airplanes. Now this one, yeah, it's a lot heavier, mm-hmm. not quite as much thrust. The F-15 lighter, more maneuverable, but classic airplane to fly the F-4 is, and just a it's really a distinct pleasure and a privilege to be able to fly.
Sure, I imagine. Tell us what's a little bit about your flight envelope. What do you get on the runway? You hit the burner. Give me some of your numbers.
Yeah, sure.
It's a little pilot talk for our pilot friends out there.
I'll talk a little pilot. Sure, you bet. You get a max AB. You're going to accelerate to about 150 knots. Going to start to rotate about 145 to 155. Then I'll climb out 160, 180, accelerate up to about 350.
Okay.
And then when I turn the corner for my first pass, I try to keep it at 350 in max AB, and then that way I can bend it around at about 4 Gs.
Nice banana pass.
Yeah, and that's what I try to do. I don't want to do it at 500 knots because it's just much too fast for people. So I try to do that when at 350, hit the markers. And then I'll actually try to lift the nose up and keep it tight to the crowd by using an altitude. And I'll decelerate to about 250 knots in max AB around the corner and then come in for my high-speed pass. Then I try to hit 450 at crowd center.
Okay.
And then I try to do about a 5 to 6, maybe 7, maybe a little more G pull-up to about 2,500 feet, and then I'll try to put it on its back. And then I'm going to be slowing down idle boards down to gear speed 250.
Okay.
Put the gear flaps hook down. And then I'll come back for the slow-speed dirty configured pass. And I try to hit show center about 180, 200 knots.
Okay.
And then I go to max AB, and I try to get 30 to 40, maybe 50 degrees nose high. And then I'll climb out 180 knots, get the gear flaps and the hookup. And then I'll just rudder over and try to find the other guys and try to rejoin with those guys.
All right.
And the P-38 today, or yesterday, we rejoined in the southwest corner. He got up to about 190 knots, so that was fast for him.
Yeah.
And then we actually accelerated to about 230.
Okay.
So we're flying across the crowd about 230 knots with that guy.
So he's a little easier to fly with than...
Well, he's not bad.
Okay.
The slowest that I've flown with was actually a P-41, and we were, no kidding, over show center about 190 knots.
Yeah. Okay, slow. So you're dragging along. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Actually, I know your viewers can't see this, but it's this picture right here. Well, I'm on the bottom, and the P-41 is in front there, and I'm on the inside wing, so that was fun.
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah.
So 190 is about as slow as you, what will it fly? What's a dirty stall speed on it?
We really go with AOA,
and
30 units is about 12 to 15 degrees nose high.
Okay.
And that's really where it'll stall. You can put in the power and fly this thing, you know, down to 120 knots.
Okay.
And still be flying.
Yeah.
With max AB.
Your high delta kind of thing.
Yeah. But that's fleeting. It does not last.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I'd say 150, 160 is really about as slow as we want to go. And that's what we fly on a final.
Okay. So that's what, on approach, you're, over 150 over the fence, or?
Well, about 150, 160. True airspeed, probably about 170.
Okay. All right.
Something like that.
Yeah. And then you've got chutes?
Yep, and that's really helpful, especially with the slow airplanes in front of me like the P-38.
Uh-huh.
He, thankfully, lands long and drives it to the end.
There you go.
I'll pull the chute, and that really helps us decelerate pretty quickly.
It's an awesome airplane. I appreciate you taking a little time for us today.
You bet, Sam.
And I really enjoy seeing the F-4 again. Like I said, I grew up with them around, and I really enjoy seeing them. I mean, they're just one of my favorites of all time. So, you know, I'm sad to know that they're getting shot down every day, but like you said, they're still doing their duty for the country.
That's right, Zane. And, just a quick word, it's just our privilege to be able to come out here and demonstrate the Air Force's air power, especially the heritage, the different generations of air power that we have.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Zane.
Again, thanks to Colonel Karg for taking the time to show us around the aircraft. I know it's a sad thing that the F-4 is being used as a live target, but I guess all in all, it's better than just waiting out in the desert for the scrapper's blade. If we can't save them all, I guess you might as well go out in style, go out with a bang, so to speak. It was really good to see the F-4 fly this weekend, and I hope to see them fly for many more years. Like Colonel Karg said, there's been 70 in service, and they're only shooting down two or three a month, so do the math, and they'll be around for a while. The next up will be the F-16s. They are already starting, I believe, Raytheon or BAE. Somebody's got one flying already, so the F-16s are the next to the dance. And but after the F-4s go, don't know what's going to happen to these F-4s that are painted up in nice Southeast Asia colors at the moment. But it'll be interesting to see them. I hope they'll go to a good home, a good museum out there, as representative of their last service. I want to thank the staff of the 2012 Alliance Air Show. Thanks to Matt Jolly here at Warbird Radio for the opportunity to share these stories with you, the listeners here on warbirdradio.com. One last thing tonight is to go out and visit your local airport. Seek out those warbirds. Go see them flying at the air shows coming up. And I want to thank you for listening.